Is that it? The CFL is just, that was it?
That's the story. I said we're not keeping Dave waiting.
All right. Let's go to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. And the Director of Basketball Operations at Carleton, consultant for the Ottawa Senators, Dave Smart, joining us now. Mr. Smart, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing okay. How's everything been for you and the family through a tough time here in the city for people?
Not bad. We've been reasonably fortunate other than miss school and stuff. But other than that, it hasn't been too bad. How have you got through? You've been away for a while. What's going on?
Yeah, I have. And very fortunate. But no power at home right now still. So I got back last night and hoping that that rectifies itself quickly with no water and no a lot of things. But look, people have gone through a lot here in the last 4 or 5 days. So lucky to have enjoyed some time away. Thanks for asking about it, though.
Oh, you know me. Always concerned about you.
Always concerned. Sorry to hold you off there, but AJ had some CFL breaking news.
That's all right. AJ called me twice this week. It's like crazy.
Oh. I did.
He didn't phrase it that way.
Blue.
He said, I've talked to Dave a couple of times this week, like almost like you were engaging in that. The way you made it sound, your tone there was that, you know, you took AJ's call twice this week.
Well, you know what?
Well, he called me twice, and I the first time I thought it must be really serious because he never calls me. But then the second time I wasn't sure what to think. I thought since I answered the first time, I might be rude not answering the second time.
You know what? Whenever I call you, you do call me back. So I appreciate that.
Well, I'm always concerned. I always think maybe you're pulled a hamstring or something and need some help.
Well,
all right.
See, I'm so tempted. You know where I'm tempted to go right now, but I won't do it. Thomas Chabot, Drake Batherson and company earlier today heard Thomas Chabot say, you know, it's one of the most meaningful things that he's ever done in hockey. And Drake Batherson gets a overtime winner in a huge comeback for Team Canada over Sweden. You know, just your thoughts on, you know, it's great. We talked last year about the guys being a part of it and what it might do. And now there's kind of a new crop that could be doing exactly the same for.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's always a positive to play in meaningful games, win or go home games. You always learn something from it. I think it's great that they're doing well. I mean, I think it's great that they chose to play. I mean, it just, you know, it shows that, you know, in this day and age, I know it sounds crazy, but in this day and age, it's nice to know the hockey players on your hockey team want to play hockey, you know, and the basketball players on your basketball team want to play basketball. I mean, it sounds crazy, but honestly, there's times where you're going, dude, do some of these guys even, like, why are they playing? And it's nice to know that most of the guys on our team actually like playing hockey.
I don't want to change the subject from hockey to basketball quickly, but I kind of feel like this is a perfect segue into the 14-man roster and what Canada put out this week, because I feel like when I see that list of 14 guys, it's great that they chose to play. Like, that's exactly how I feel about seeing RJ Barrett and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and, you know, whether it's Dwight Powell or Dylan Brooks and Jamal Murray, who's, you know, obviously battled injury. To me, that's exactly how I feel when I see those players committing right through 2024 to play for Canada.
Yeah, I think it's great. It's a great start. I mean, they still have to commit once, you know, training camp starts and showing up at training camp, ready to play, ready to practice. But I mean, the fact that they want to put their name out there now is a real positive.
When it comes to Andrew Wiggins, because would you agree that he's playing his best basketball in his career right now with Golden State? And it helps to be on a good team with champions and guys that have been there and done that before, and you're going to have to fit in or basically get the hell out of there. But is that a loss at this time, just given how well he seems to be fitting in Golden State on a winning team and a winning culture?
I think it's a loss. I mean, he's a great player, and he's obviously one of our the 10 best players in our country right now. I don't necessarily agree that it's the best he's ever played. I just think that he's in a more suitable role. So, you know, like I think he's done some good things in the past. I mean, his first couple of years, his numbers were pretty good. It's not really the role that he's best suited for. No one wants to say that this is the role that they're suited for, like being a defender, rebounder, and guy who takes open shots and attacks when it's there. But once you get older, you start going, well, maybe I could be pretty special at this. And he fits that role very well. I mean, he's a great defender. He's long. He's athletic. He moves extremely well. He rebounds decently. I mean, I think in this role, he's forced to rebound a bit more, so that's a positive. But I think he's had better numbers. I'm not necessarily meaning he's playing better when he had better numbers, but this is a great role for him. I mean, he's not a one or two guy. He's probably a good third option on most teams, and on this team, he's somewhere between 2 and 5 every day. You know, I mean, he's sometimes 2, he's sometimes 5, offensively.
How do you think? I mean, I watched about half of this series so far, and like I feel like he's doing a hell of a job on Doncic. How do you look at how he's handling that, and how difficult that matchup would be to defend a player that's one of the best in the game?
I mean, I think he's doing a great job. I think the first three games, you know, the numbers kind of don't give him justice on the job he's done on him. I mean, because I don't think Doncic played very well in the first three games. He's put up ridiculously good numbers in terms of scoring and stuff, but the amount he dominates the ball to put up those numbers is almost a negative. And I think a lot of that has to do with Andrew. So I think that's a real positive. I do think that Dallas is a little overmatched in that they have to work so hard to get points. And, I've said this before, they're at their best when the ball's in Luka's hands, you know, half the time, and then split between Dinwiddie and Brunson the other times, when it's almost 100% of the time in Doncic's hands when he's on. It tends to hurt Dallas. But Andrew's done a great job. Sorry.
And back to Canada, Is this the second best roster in the world? And I know that doesn't guarantee you anything. We've seen that in you know, how different FIBA ball can be and how challenging it can be. But, you know, should this be the group that finally kind of gets over the hump and gets, you know, Canada to Paris?
If they were playing an NBA season, yeah, it's the second best roster. But the NBA and... The NBA and FIBA are almost two different sports. I mean, they're not the same game. So, I mean, they certainly have a lot of talented basketball players, but you know, it's a different sport. I mean, comparing the NBA to a EuroLeague game is ridiculous. I mean, it's unlike, and I've said this before, you know, soccer tends to be soccer everywhere in the world. I mean, there's differences and different styles, but the game is the game. Like these are just two totally different games. The NBA and FIBA, the rules, everything. It's just a different game. So, I mean, I don't necessarily, I agree with you. If we were just playing one-on-one, then we'd probably be the second best team in the world in terms of playing one-on-one, but that it's not one-on-one, it's FIBA, and it's not the NBA, so it's not an isolation game, it's not just a ball screen game, although it's a big part of a ball screen game, but they can defend the ball screen with a whole lot more parts than the NBA defends the ball screen. But the NBA tries to defend it with two guys a lot of the time because of the zone rules, and because of that they switch a lot of the time, and because they switch a lot of the time there's a constant matchup into isolation situations non-stop. The FIBA game's different. Their ball screen defense, it's their coverages are way more intricate. I mean, in that they do a ton more things because they can, because of the rules, they can cover it with five guys. They don't, they, Not that the NBA doesn't try to cover it with five guys, but they certainly cover it with two way more than like EuroLeague does. EuroLeague covers it with five way more. And then, you know, on the flip side, that there is way more straight isolation in the NBA than there is in the FIBA game. So, and there's a whole lot more action. It's just a different, it's different rules. So it's a different sport in my mind.
So silly question then. Why would an NBA coach be the right coach then to go through all of the FIBA stuff? I'm not saying Nick Nurse isn't a great coach, but wouldn't somebody else that's not an NBA coach be better suited with what you just described?
I think Nick's the perfect choice because he's spent a lot of his life in the FIBA game, in the European game. So he knows the players, he knows their tendencies, he knows what will probably be weaknesses for them, but he also understands the game and he understands how to defend it. And he's been in the game not too long ago. So I think he'd almost be the perfect choice. I think you're going to, if you took just an NBA guy who's never lived the European experience in terms of the game being totally different, I think you get yourself in trouble. I think you've seen that even on the US level. I mean, yes, they've won, but they've won with 100 times more talent, and that's the only thing that's got them over the top. And if you bring in just a European guy, they don't understand the mindset of the NBA player. So it's going to take them way too long to figure out like how to push the right buttons and make them comfortable with what they're doing. So I think Nick is probably as close to the perfect answer to this as you're going to find in terms of representing our country.
Should we have more guys that are playing EuroLeague then? Or do you just throw your best NBA guys out there and hope that they figure it out?
I've always felt like in your roster of 12, you should have your nine best talents, which is probably nine NBA guys, and then three EuroLeague level guys who can add something if the game starts going that way and create some things from a team concept that's different than the NBA guys. But more importantly, just every day, the time they spend with those guys explaining how the game is different and how to adjust to it and things they need to do. I've always felt like that. Not to mention that if you're going to take the 12 NBA guys, the three NBA guys you don't play very much, they're going to be a problem in the room. And I mean, you two have heard this from me so many times. The room is so important. Like I get that a lot of bad GMs or average GMs and bad coaches don't take that into consideration, and that's why they're average to bad. And good coaches and good GMs, they understand the importance of the room. So I think it just changes the room. There's less negative dynamics. There's not less problem guys. There's less guys who there's almost a hierarchy put in place when you come in, and the EuroLeague guys, maybe they're 10th to 12th in terms of talent. They might play a little bit more than they would expect to, but they come in understanding that they're probably 10th to 12th, and they're happy to be there. And because of that, the room is 100 times better, not to mention their experience will help those guys.
Is that why the Dream Team was the best of all time? Because they had a 12th guy that had no business being there? In Coach K's boy, Leitner?
I don't know if that's the case, but I really appreciate how you get your Coach K shots in any opportunity.
And he puts his hand up.
It's a stretch, but whatever.
He puts his hand up like, no, I have another important question to ask. And I'm like, okay. And then we get that.
Just because he's retired doesn't mean he's retired from this program.
Okay.
No, apparently not. But another great question.
Well, he did bring up a great stat earlier that I will segue, that the Boston Celtics are the fourth team ever in NBA history to win at least two playoff road games in each of their first three series. They've done that. They now are one game away from the finals. And I've been on this here from the beginning, how much I don't want to root for this team, but how much I love watching this team. Can the Boston Celtics win the NBA championship?
Oh, without question. I mean, I don't think they'll be the favorites, but they without question, could win.
How have they done this?
They just defend. They defend, and they've embraced their roles. You know, it's team sport is really kind of simple, even though most people make it really complicated. Most people just look at the talent and make their decision based on the talent. Like, I mean, my kid's going through tryouts now, and like a lot of coaches, you know, they just look at talent, and you know, if you're not a top three guy, the talent's kind of irrelevant because everybody's replaceable past the top three. But no one wants to believe that. But you know, the Celtics, they clearly look like a team at the start of the year who all had their own personal agendas. Now they clearly look like a team. You don't have to be a basketball expert to see that, like to watch them play one game and go, that guy's role is this, that guy's role is this, that guy's role is this, this guy is expected to do this. They don't go out of their roles. You know their roles, even if you're not a great basketball person. You can't win at the highest level if people don't accept and embrace and enjoy their roles. And it's team sport. It's the same in basketball as it is in hockey. There's absolutely no different. And as much as I don't like Kwesi or AJ Sports Soccer, pretty sure it's the exact same thing in their sport as well. You know, like but so many people, and I say it again, GMs, coaches, whatever, are so in love with talent. It's crazy. I mean, like Nick Faul was good in Ottawa, and now he's great in Tampa Bay. But he and I don't know if you guys noticed, but like he played some time on the power play in Tampa Bay. I know points out, but still, like yeah, they have so much trust in that guy, and they just give him more roles because you have the right type of person. And I can't say it enough. Like the Celtics are just that team. And I mean, Golden State, we talked a little bit about it with Andrew. Is Andrew playing at all like he played in Minnesota? Not even close. Not even close. And it's crazy because when he was in Minnesota, if he played this style of basketball, probably all the people around him would have been going, don't do that. Don't do that. You need 22. You got to average 22 a game. You got to shoot it more. You got to get to the basket. You got to shoot more threes. But now he's getting all the love in the world playing the role that he probably should have played from the start, but he's bought into that role. That's why Golden State's so good.
So you want to crack on AJ for a shot at Coach K? And that's fine because he deserved that. But then you get a shot in at your kid's hockey tryouts during a Boston Celtics question, and then a quick love for Nick Paul.
Circled
all the way around from your kid to Nick Paul back to the Celtics. Okay.
Don't forget Kwesi.
Oh, yeah. A quick shot at Kwesi. Yeah.
Let's be very clear here. You guys spend a lot of time talking to me. I am their father. They have my genes. Do you think they're like the perfect kid? I tell you. They're way better than they should be, considering who their dad is.
They got a lot of intangibles, that's for sure.
They've got some issues they got to work through because of having my genes.
Just an incredible answer that took shots at Kwesi and AJ and a little love for Nick Paul and your kids'
never
hockey
took
tryouts.
A shot at Kwesi, took a shot at soccer or European football, whatever I'm supposed to call it.
You said Kwesi and AJ sport, like they run it.
Sport. It is their sport. Mm-hmm.
I like multiple sports.
Do you have a better question there, AJ? Yeah. Are we going to stay on the weak side of
it? I was going to ask about...
Did you get bunched a question because of the ridiculousness of the last one?
No. I was just going to ask about winning on the road. And especially, like, I feel like basketball might be the toughest to win on the road in the playoffs because of the environment and what that says... Just, I mean, we know about everyone buying into their roles, but just that what that says about any team, you know, finding a way in a tough environment. I mean, you look at last night, St. Louis is a prime example as well, right? A team that's won, that, you know, was down 3 goals, then McKinnon scores to make it 4-3, and the whole world seems to be going against you. I mean, I have the greatest respect for teams that can win in that type of environment because it's not easy. And what Boston has done in these playoffs, doing it round after round after round, really, really impressive.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, but it still comes back to playing the game the right way to win. I mean, you guys watch a lot of regular season hockey, right? And I assume you watch a little bit of regular season basketball.
Mm-hmm.
What percentage of the players and the teams are playing those games to win? I mean, they're all saying they're playing there, but let's compare it to how Colorado St. Louis played last night to what you see in the regular season, or how you see Boston play compared to what you see every other team and most of the players do in the regular season. What, 20% of the players, 5% of the teams are playing to actually win every game? Like, there's no agenda other than winning on their mind during the regular season?
Well,
and most of those 20% come from the teams that are still alive in the playoffs in both sports.
I feel like the four sports that I follow the closest, football, soccer, basketball, and hockey, like, I feel like hockey and basketball, and I don't know which is a greater disparity, but I feel like the disparity between regular season hockey, regular season basketball is quite great, and the disparity between, you know, a cup match and a league match in soccer and a playoff game and a regular season game in football aren't that great. I feel like the sport is pretty similar, whereas I feel like it's almost like watching two different sports, playoff hockey, playoff basketball versus regular season hockey and regular season basketball.
I agree. And again, but most of the teams that try during the regular seasons are the teams that go the furthest in the playoffs. Like, very seldom is there a team that kind of turns it on. You know, it happens once in a while, but like Boston, you can say, well, they finished second, but they were basically in last for the first part of the season. And then they just they hit rock bottom, changed like accepted roles, changed how they played. They were hard to play against almost every single night. They had as good or maybe the best record in the last half of the season as anyone in the league. And now they're just going through the playoffs the same way. They've accepted everything. And you know, Golden State's a little different because they had so many injuries and then they got healthy. But, you know, but they were playing great. Then they struggled. Then they got healthy. And now they're back to playing great again. I think in the NHL, like the good teams are the good teams. And I feel a little bad for like a team like Florida, because I'm kind of I always liked Tampa, but then when Nick went there, I became a huge Tampa fan. I mean, they got swept, Florida, but holy moly, like that last game was ridiculous. Like, they dominated the game. They absolutely dominated the game.
Might have been the first one all playoffs long that they dominated. They scored three goals. Four games in the playoffs. The highest scoring team in the league.
Worse in the first round than they were in the second round.
Well, they were bad in both rounds, and they're not good enough right now.
I don't know. I just think that sometimes teams, like, they had the brink. They could have quit. They dominated their elimination game. They didn't play great up till then. But I don't think they were that bad in the second round. I thought they were bad in the first round, and they won four games in the first round. I just think, but the teams that are alive, they have good culture. They generally have good culture. And like I said, it's amazing how many players, teams have bad culture, and how many people try to justify it and spin it and talk around it. There's no talking around it. Like, a player or an organization that has bad culture, they have bad culture. Everybody can see it. No excuses for it. Just get rid of the people who are a problem and bring in the right people, even if they're not as talented. Now, you can't have a huge gap in talent, because that's all you need, the talent. You need the talent. Well, it's not talent if you always lose. Yes, you need the talent, but you might as well get the culture first and then find the talent who has culture next. Because sometimes you can bring in, let's pretend Lever Sage has talent in anything. I don't know what it would be. It would be amazing if it was anything, but let's pretend he had talent in any team sport. if you had his talent and still had his horrible attitude, which he has, and he's very strong with his horrible attitude. If you brought him into a team that had incredible culture, a team, whether it's basketball or hockey, that had incredible culture, 9 out of 10 times, he's going to end up having a great attitude because he has no choice. That's where he is every day. There's going to be someone's going to get through to him. The problem is you bring in talent, and then if you have 24 players on your team and 5 of them are reasonably talented guys with attitudes, and they don't even have to all be reasonably talented guys, just 5 or 6 guys who have talent, they all blend together and they destroy the team. If there's only one Lee Versage, he's got no choice. So get your culture, then find your talent.
So one more on this, just in terms of, you know, that regular season to playoff disparity, and this is an NHL one. I mean, coincidence that, I mean, 3 teams that are out now, Minnesota had the 2nd-best record in the West, Florida the best record in the East, Toronto the 3rd-best record in the East, and these are teams, Minnesota 10th-best goals against in the East, Florida 8th-best goals against, sorry, Minnesota 10th-best goals against in the West, Florida 8th-best goals against in the East, Toronto 9th-best goals against in the East. I mean, these are teams that are fun to watch, right? Florida and Toronto played an 8-7 game in overtime late in the season and a lot of goals and stuff. I mean, is it coincidence that these teams that were high-scoring teams that were amongst the best in the league but, you know, at very average defenders are going home before the conference finals?
I don't think it's a coincidence at all. I mean, I mean, Minnesota's kind of weird because I think they've changed their style a little bit over the years, and it's less of a playoff style than it used to be. Like, they used to be the okay team that was a tough out to being a pretty good regular season team that's not as tough an out. But, like, as you say, they're offensive-minded teams. Because they've got high-end offense, when they have power plays, like the Leafs are the number one power play team in the league, well, what does that mean when you get to the playoffs and there's so few penalties called? Now, in fairness, there are a decent amount of penalties called in their series that they lost. But when it mattered, like when it got really tough, the game was called differently, and all of a sudden all that high-end talent had to play 5-on-5 longer, and now they're not quite as good because no one's as good 5-on-5, especially if you're playing against a disciplined, experienced, smart defensive hockey team. So I don't think it's a coincidence at all. I still think even the Edmonton thing, I think it says a lot to what McDavid is doing. I mean, I assume you guys are watching the games as much as I'm watching the games. It's mind-blowing what he's doing. Do you not agree? Like, at this level, it is incredible what he does every game. Because I don't think they're built for the playoffs, but he is so incredibly dominant, it does not matter.
Well, the interesting thing is they're the only team left. All those teams that I mentioned, Florida, Toronto, Minnesota, gave up 3 goals a game or more. They're the only team left in the playoffs that gave up 3 goals or more. And you know, they're still alive, Edmonton. You know, they're right in the same vicinity. I think they're 8th. So better than Minnesota, but 8th in goals against in the West. And so you're right. I mean, their style should lead them to being out, but I've made the point, look, there are better players in the history of the game in terms of, like, okay, this is the greatest player in the history of the game, but I'm not sure I've ever seen someone play at this level before. Not even, and I grew up in Edmonton when Gretzky played. Like, he is just that good and that dominant.
I mean, I agree with you. They're better players in the history of the game, but not if he plays at this level for another 7-8 years.
No, that's fair. Like
if he plays the way he's played in the playoffs, which is a pretty big ask and probably won't happen, obviously. But if he did, then he's the best that's ever played. So this spurt, now, I think it's a little hard to say because you got to look back and go, Gretzky was pretty ridiculous. Lemieux was pretty ridiculous. What was their greatest playoffs 8-game spurt or 10-game spurt? It might have been just pretty close to what we're seeing here, but I know we're in 2022, so we have to go with straight recency bias. But I would hazard to, I would argue that even their best 10, 12 games or 11 game spurt might have been just as good, but it would be tough to be better. Like it is something, and yeah. He is carrying a team, a team that has a lot of a decent high end talent already behind him. He is just so much better than everybody. It's crazy. So I think that's why Edmonton is a little different than those other three teams, because they've got a guy who is already debatably the best in the world, and then he elevated his game like 3-4 notches. It's incredible. I mean, I've been around sports a long time. And I'm not going to say that it's the best I've seen, but because there are you tend to forget some of the incredible things you've seen. But right, it's right up there.
So put yourself in Daryl Sutter's shoes. His quote today, and this seems like a Dave Smart line to me. Maybe our guys are doing everything they can. Maybe Edmonton's guys are just better. Would that have any effect, do you think? Because it's obviously a mind game, trying to get into his own players' heads. What do you think about the quote and whether that would work with some of your players?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it hurt or help. Again, it's one of those things that he's definitely saying to use the media to get through to his team or get some complacency with the other team or whatever. I mean, who knows if it'll work or won't work. I mean, if they lose, then it didn't work. If they win, it did work. But really, like, maybe just circumstances happen. But, I mean, the bottom line is they're not out of the series. They're still the home team. Like, they need to win. They need to win the two games they're supposed to win, which is still going to be tough. But at home, they need to win two games that they should win, and they should be moderate favorites in, and they got to play one great game. Like, if they play two good games and one great game, they're winning the series. Now, is that going to happen? Who knows? But it's a whole lot better than if they were going back to Edmonton and they'd have to play two great games and a good game. You know, and even the good game is tough because you're still the underdog in the series. Like, if all things being equal, Calgary should, if McDavid plays like a human being as opposed to a insane talent that he's playing at, if he just plays his normal level, Calgary should be the slight favorites here. And then they get home ice for two out of the three games. So they're not out of it, but I do think he's probably put some, you know, he said some things to his team and then he's added to it with the press, and he's probably trying to push some buttons, and he probably knows what his players, what are going to push the buttons best with his players. I mean, he's done a wonderful job with his team. I just find it funny when, and I know you're not doing it, which is weird because you usually do jump to conclusions as if you know what's going on, but you didn't. You were a very good media person in this case. But I do find it funny when people go, oh, you can't do that. It's like, what do you mean you can't do that? That guy's in the room with them every day. Maybe there's nothing that can be done, but if anyone knows what button to press in terms of the media, it would be the guy who's been with them every day and has an incredible amount of experience as a coach. So he knows what he's doing. Will it work? Maybe McDavid's just too good. Who knows?
So who is the best you've ever seen, any sport, when you were talking about McDavid there?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's funny because I think Jordan's got to be – like, there was never a time with Jordan where he wasn't dominant in the playoffs. And I don't think anyone take – now, this is why I think McDavid's thing is so crazy, is it's the first time I've ever felt like someone took their game to another level. Like, I've never felt any – I've ever watched anyone take their game to another level. They're just so insanely competitive that they play the same way no matter what the circumstance. So Jordan game seven or NBA finals is Jordan playing cards with his buddies, like his same mindset. So it's so easy for him just to play the way he needs to play, and everybody else plays worse because now it's a big game. It's like I think I've said it on the show, when kids or parents, when I'm recruiting their kid and they say, oh, you should come down, Jimmy's got a big game on Tuesday. And I go, what? Well, he's got a big game on Tuesday. You should come down. I go, well, what do you mean? I go, well, if he has a big game, that means he's going to choke every, like, he's got a good chance he's going to choke. What do you mean? Well, how's it a big game? How's the game any bigger than practice? How's, like, if I show up at practice, why, and he doesn't know I'm there, why would he be playing any harder in that game than he is in practice? Because if he is, if there's a difference, he's going to choke because he's going to have the wrong things in his head. He's not, it's like practicing foul shots. Well, if you never shoot a foul shot or you only shoot one every week, you're not going to be a great foul shooter. If you do it every single day for a long time, you're going to be great at it. If you compete every single second of every practice as if it's the world championship, when the world championship comes along, it's like, what's the difference? That's why Oz was so great at our level, is because if we were playing one-on-one at 11 o'clock at night in a high school gym, he was as insanely competitive, that just as insane as he would have been in national championship final. There is zero difference for him. So he played in a natural state. To me, Jordan, when did he have that bad time in the playoffs? Like, never. Like, his first time in the playoffs, he had 63 in that overtime game against Boston. Yes, their team wasn't very good, and they lost some series, but it was never because he wasn't dominant. Whereas LeBron, he was not dominant at all for the good 6, 7, 8 years of his career. And then he sort of got called out for it, and then he's changed, and he's been way better since. So, like, to me, Jordan is the guy from day one. Like, he won the NCAA championship. He just never had a bad series. Never. Like, all the way through his career. So, who's the best? He's the best. To me, McDavid, in my experience, is the one guy who's done what I didn't think could be done, which is elevate a ridiculously high level of talent. He's done that this playoffs. He's better than he's ever been, which is weird to me.
Always good to talk to you, Coach.
Good to talk to you. Glad you're back. AJ, I appreciate the calls. It always means a lot to me when you're calling.
All right. I'll call more then.
Turn to me. Yeah. can't believe you just asked. Please don't.
Please don't. That was sarcasm. Please don't.
Can't believe you just asked for that publicly. Coach Dave Smart, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, there goes Dave Smart and the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. Quick break for traffic and weather, and back with more of The Drive on TSN 1200.